Okay, well, thanks for sitting here so far. My name is Ramsay, and I was asked to talk by John, one of the organisers of this conference, on, I guess, a foreign perspective on what's wrong with American anarchism, which is somewhat bizarre, I guess. But and my immediate thought was, well, I spoke last year. I don't feel very comfortable speaking, and I thought I kind of said everything I felt able to say last year. But I guess John convinced me, or massaged my ego enough otherwise. His theory was that I would say lots of kind of controversial, probably abusive things, but that would go over okay because I had a funny accent, and that would kind of sugarcoat it. That may be the case. Actually, one of the few other speaking engagements I had ever, actually, it was a few months ago. I talked to a bunch of high school students about anarchism in this wee town called Petaluma, which is near the Bay Area where I live, and they were fairly attentive and asked, you know, some strange questions. And I guess as part of their report, their teacher made them write me a kind of thank you letter after the talk. So 2 weeks after this talk, I got a huge packet, you know, from 60 students, I guess, and every single one of them, and I'm not exaggerating, not that I ever exaggerate, I think it's fair to say, every single one of them said, you know, when you first started speaking, we thought you were putting on a funny voice, but then we realised it was really true and you actually do speak like Sean Connery, and that's so cool. Which was, I guess, perhaps I failed to impart the essential wisdom of anarchism to that audience. So what I'm going to do today is abuse no one, because of course I love you all and we're one big happy family and we're all okay. What I would like to bring up briefly is a few what Alfred Bonanno calls tensions with anarchism, or anarchist tensions. So I'm just going to throw out a few points, hopefully briefly. Again, last year, for those that suffered through it, I believe I talked for about 70 minutes. And so hopefully I'll throw out a few ideas, a few what I consider to be tensions within anarchism, and then I'll shut up and the rest of you can have a great discussion about it. So I guess the first anarchist tension, shall we say, I'd like to throw out there is structure or infrastructure and the lack of in contemporary anarchism. I'll give two kind of wee examples of that. The left, for all its faults, actually has infrastructure. I mean, I don't know how most people here came to anarchism or discovered anarchism or first came across it. But what the left has that we don't is they have a certain infrastructure. They have regular papers. They have bookstores. Again, I don't know how many folks here were when Todd May was talking about when he first wanted to find out about anarchism, the only place he knew to come to it was Revolution Books, which is the RCP bookstore in New York. And I presume that scenario is not dissimilar, is not unique. I mean, I don't know how folks here, again, maybe you can talk about that later, came to anarchism. It's actually pretty difficult. Part of the reason is, I would argue, is there's very few intersections that people can come to anarchism. We don't have, I mean, again, this conference here is almost unique in that it's one of the few forums people have to talk about anarchism, to further anarchist theory and how that theory hopefully involves our practice. There are very few anarchist groups, anarchist organisations. And I think without that, that poses serious problems. As well as that kind of physical infrastructure, shall we say, I think there's a huge less tangible paucity of poverty. Again, I'll try and illustrate that with another. During the Democratic National Convention, there was actually an anarchist conference, which happened a couple of days before the actual official convention and protests around it, which I went to and was horrified by largely. One of the horrific things which happened was, at that time, anarchism was getting a huge amount of press in the mainstream media, and the organisers of that LA conference held a press conference at which there was literally the world's press were there. There was the New York Times, Washington Post, folk from all over the world, the London Times, etc. The questions put to the spokespersons of the anarchist gathering were not particularly hostile. I mean, there was a couple of bland questions of, you know, local shopkeepers in LA are afraid that you're going to smash all the windows. Is this true? I mean, that's not a particularly hostile or barbed question. And if it's not true, what does anarchism mean then, if it's not just smashing windows? To my horror and consternation, and actually I watched this on C-SPAN, it was one of the people that were there, and in a previous housing arrangement I had, shall we say, I was living with another more bourgeois anarchist who had cable, so I could watch this on C-SPAN. He actually had cable because he wanted to watch baseball 24 hours a day and the Western Channel to watch really bad cowboy films. But anyway, so this was shown on C-SPAN, you know, four times that day or whatever, and I watched it, the whole hour press conference. And it was really horrifying. So they were asked, again, not unreasonably, to the world's press to define anarchism. The poor spokesperson who grappled with this thorny issue could only come up with, well, we're against poverty. Which, I mean, hopefully I shouldn't have to say anything. I mean, I don't think anyone is for poverty. I mean, even George Bush presumably is against poverty, officially. And this was her definition of anarchism, which, again, what I'm trying to say about infrastructure is presumably we need, speaking to the media is an art, a skill. Presumably that's not too difficult, that we should be able to address such issues, perhaps get some training, get some organisation, and use such means to further, hopefully, our wonderful ideals. Which I guess brings me to the second tension with anarchism. And like the spokesperson in LA, it seems that there seems to be a great difficulty in defining anarchism, which is problematic if we can't agree amongst ourselves. I don't know how we're going to proselytise to the waiting masses. I was going to say I don't believe in identity politics, but actually that's not true. I do. I identify as an anarchist. To me, that has a certain meaning, which I'll tell you right now, because I guess you're dying to hear. Anarchism is two things, or shall we say the core of anarchism is two things. Firstly, it's a particular and distinct form of social and economic organisation. Secondly, I've just dropped my pen, it's the self-emancipation of the working class. Lots of other things may or may not feed into the anarchist project, but without these two things, it is not anarchism. Anti-fascism is not anarchism. Feminism is not anarchism. Whatever you want to name is not anarchism. These things may feed into and feed upon, be influenced by. You can have green fascism. Hence, being an eco-anarchist is not anarchism. To take it beyond that, if someone, people, groups, whatever, do not hold those two core beliefs, I don't see how they can be anarchists. My presumption is there's no one here that's a primitivist. If you are, you have my sympathy. I don't see how primitivism in any way, shape or form can be considered part of anarchism, since primitivism does not believe in any of those tenets of anarchism. It doesn't believe in the history, it doesn't believe in the concepts, it thinks that everything that one considers to be anarchism, rightly or wrongly, is antithetical to their beliefs. Hence, I do not see how that can be considered to be anarchism. I guess I'm sure we'll come back to that. The third tension, shall we say, I see in anarchism is the tension between theory and practice. Obviously, both are vital. I think there's a huge problem when we get hung up on theory. You know, anarchism, by and large, we're pretty clever chaps. Chapesses. Clever bastards, all in all. Any idea is clever in itself. People, however, tend to be kind of a bit more complicated and difficult. And if those ideas can't be translated into some meaningful way to have impact, action, and relevance to actual people's lives, conditions, then those ideas are irrelevant. Again, I think coming from that, there's a tension between, as anarchists, our theory and our practice. I don't think you can be a theoretical anarchist. I mean, yeah, you can, but that's a meaningless concept. You can be a theoretical Marxist. You know, you can be a Marxist and be an utter bastard. You can still be a Marxist. I don't think you can be an anarchist and be an utter bastard. Anarchism presupposes that we try to the best of our abilities, despite the horrible deformities that capitalism puts upon us, that we act in certain ways, we have certain morals and certain ethics. Again, I'll leave that thought with you. The fifth tension, I think is, again, partly stemming from these, is our relation to non-anarchists. How do we as anarchists relate to those that are not anarchists? Again, I'll give you another wee anecdote to perhaps highlight what I'm trying to say. Unfortunately, it doesn't come from the North American experience, but I'm sure such experiences are unfortunately universal. In Britain in the 84-85, there was a massive strike. I'm sure you've heard me ramble on about it before. The miners' strike, huge, massive conflict. It was horrible, brutal, glorious. The miners were smashed. They don't exist anymore. During that strike, which involved a quarter of a million miners, say the biggest, during that strike, anarchists were involved in many ways, and anarchists were one of the only left groups who I think acquitted themselves in ways that they can be proud. They lent active support, solidarity with the miners in all kinds of ways, on the picket lines, in organising through international anarchist contacts, sending miners delegates to Europe to get support, to making connections with other unions in Europe. I mean, all kinds of magnificent support, where the left itself was terrible, pathetic, and was basically typically only interested in the miners' strike insofar as they could sell papers from it. I say the anarchists were a glorious exception and were unsurprisingly seen to be by the miners themselves. Again, the miners during that strike practiced what can only be called mutual aid. None of the miners, with the exception of a few anarchists, and there were anarchist miners, I'm sure had ever read Kropotkin, but in that year and a half strike, the miners undoubtedly practiced mutual aid. The mining communities organised themselves in periods of insane hardship, suffering. They had daily assemblies where they decided who's going to go on the picket lines, who's going to, they didn't get strike pay, of course. We only have so much wood. Again, this is in the middle of a horrible British winter. So we only have so much wood for fuel. So who's going to get the wood? Well, the assembly decides that the wood, unsurprisingly, goes to the old people with kids. Who's going to go on the picket line today? Well, we've heard today that the police are going to be particularly vicious and brutal and out to get the strike leaders. So the women will say, okay, well, we'll go on the picket line today. They organised in tangible ways, always, in terms of what could only be called mutual aid or anarchism. As I say, anarchists were also involved in the strike, did great things. As a result of that, after the strike, many of the miners wanted to join the anarchists. Many miners actually wanted to join. The main anarchist group involved with the miners in Britain at the time was called the Direct Action Movement. Numerous, tens if not hundreds of miners actually wanted to join the Direct Action Movement. The Direct Action Movement didn't know what to do. Here was normal working people actually wanted to join the anarchist movement in large numbers because they were so impressed with what the anarchists had done to support them, the solidarity, etc., that they had shown. The Direct Action Movement pretty much imploded over this issue, had no idea on how to cope with normal people. And again, this is normal people who are sympathetic. This is not how to cope with normal people who might be racist or... But these are normal, sympathetic, potential allies. You know, the Direct Action Movement didn't know what to do, couldn't cope. So again, how as anarchists do we deal with regular folks? Another tension I'd like to talk or throw out there is, and like many of my ideas, this is not fully formed, but the difference or the problems between what I will call, for want of a better definition, subculture and community. I think that obviously community is important, having a sense of belonging, a sense of shared, whatever, and again, in the history of anarchism has certainly been very important. Equally, anarchism has been, I was going to say plagued, but that sounds a very pejorative term. Anarchism has had many subcultures associated with it, primarily in the last 20 years. That of punk, I'm happy to say. I'm a punk. I love punk music. You know, I've been a punk since 1979. It's really great. I don't think that has anything to do with anarchism, but it has a large impact. The punk subculture has had and continues to have a large impact on anarchism. And again, I think that is problematic for all sorts of reasons. The associations, rightly or wrongly, that are made, that because of, shall we say, the numbers involved, for example, that anarchism is punk and vice versa, they're interchangeable. Not to mention that, again, the impact this has, or such assumptions have, on, again, the rest of the world and their views of anarchism. Again, to give a little personal anecdote, again, I was a young anarcho-punk, and as some of you older punkers may be aware, there was a rather fine anarcho-punk band called the Poison Girls. So aged 14, 15, which was a long time ago now, I had a leather jacket, because leather jackets are undoubtedly cool, with their Poison Girls on the back, because they were a fucking rad band, and they were, you know, and excellent politics, they're feminists, and they're anarchists, and they're really great. And my mother said, you know, she told me this again years later, because I wasn't aware of the impact of my little leather jacket, age 15. You know, one of my mother's best friends said to her, and again, my mother told me this years later, she said, you know, Ramsey's a really nice boy, but why does he want to poison girls? again, another subculture, you know, I'm involved in to a large extent is I play football, soccer. I played at a fairly high competitive level. Arguments could be made that there are aspects of both participating in such a sport and certainly ways of supporting it, notably by the fine writer Eduardo Galeano, that, you know, this has political, or can be construed as political, has political connotations. I mean, personally, I think that's kind of ridiculous. I wouldn't claim again that my intersection, my passion for that particular subculture has anything to do with politics. Okay, so I guess I'll end on perhaps the thorniest of the issues, the tensions within anarchism. And actually, I'm not going to mention, it has to be said, perhaps to the consternation of some and the relief of others, I'm not going to go down the Judaism route, as was mooted at some point. But I will say, if anyone wants to examine the tensions involved in that, shall we say, I'd highly recommend that you check out Norman Finkelstein's book, The Holocaust Industry, which brings up a lot of fine points, I believe. The last tension, shall we say, within contemporary anarchism I'd like to address or raise is the thorny issue of class, which I think a lot of the things I've alluded to are points that I've kind of raised heretofore, I think, stem from this mighty beast. I think the main problem anarchism has today is because of its class composition, which is almost overwhelmingly middle class. Pretty much however one wants to define class, I suspect no one's going to argue with that statement, in the same way that 100 years ago, or what has been called, or has been called during this conference, classical anarchism, shall we say, was overwhelmingly comprised of the working class 100 years ago, even 50 years ago. I think that class composition brings with it a whole host of attitudes, actions, assumptions, presumptions, which have ensured, I argue, or I will argue, that since anarchism's reinvention from the 60s has ensured that it has remained at best irrelevant and at worst kind of reactionary force in terms of politics. What do I mean by that? There has always, of course, been middle-class folks involved in anarchism. There's always been debates within anarchism, again, what now seems to be called classical anarchism. You know, 100 years ago, Fabri, the Italian anarchist, was writing about bourgeois influences on anarchism, for example. There was tensions within the CNT between the leadership, which was largely middle-class, whether it was Federico Montseny or Abadi Santillan, and its membership, which was largely working class, especially its most class-conscious membership, shall we say, who grouped themselves in the FAI. So these tensions, these debates are certainly nothing new. What is, I say, markedly different, I think, is the kind of the sheer numbers involved in the two epochs, shall we say, and what theory and practice that brings to contemporary anarchism. to all intents and purposes, after the Second World War, anarchism was basically dead. In the 60s and 70s, it undoubtedly had a resurgence, to some extent reinvented itself. Since then, and starting with then, it has almost entirely been, as I say, of middle class composition. That has meant that the struggles that anarchism chose to operate within, attach itself to, and define itself were different from those which it did 100 years ago. Again, in America, it was largely based around, as it was in Britain, was based around, for example, the anti-nuclear stuff. The Clamshell Alliance, again, is heralded as a great example of anarchist organisation. And in terms of organisation, it may well have been. I don't think that's a coincidence that anarchists chose to get involved in anti-nuclear stuff, which again was in Britain, the peace movement. Again, starting in the 60s, the Spies for Peace, the Aldermaston marches, the rebirth of the peace movement in Britain was very much anarchist influence, anarchist driven. Whereas 50 years ago, in Britain or America, it was the labour movement that was very much driven, influenced by, etc., anarchism. Other things anarchists have chosen to get involved with, again, are what I would call militant liberalism. It's picking particular concerns, which are concerns largely of middle-class people because they have the privileges and abilities to pick those particular concerns. They are not, which typically means they are not economic concerns. Again, I think, as I said before, punk has had a huge influence on the rebirth of anarchism, undoubtedly, especially in Britain, and I think British anarcho-punk then very much influenced what's going on in America, where you just look around the circle and see the number of folks that are wearing punk t-shirts or whatever, or have been influenced by punk. Again, be that as it may, the influence, the politics of anarcho-punk were actually not anarchist at all in the slightest, which, despite the fact that certainly in Britain, most adherents of punk and anarcho-punk were undoubtedly working class. The ethos of anarcho-punk, I say, it was this bizarre kind of militant liberalism. It was being a vegetarian or a vegan. It was being anti-nuclear. It was a whole host of single issues, which may or may not be valuable in themselves, but have got nothing to do with anarchism. And in fact, denied any actual politics or class analysis. I mean, Crass, or of course the grandfathers, you know, denied class as a concept. Again, I'm not going to start quoting lyrics, but any Crass fan will be familiar with there. And I think that has horribly skewed what the classical anarchists were involved in 100 years ago would be considered today bizarre liberal reformism. So let's take the Haymarket Martyrs. What were they martyred over? They were martyred over, I believe, the 8-hour day. Again, presumably that would be considered, you know, what the hell are anarchists doing getting involved in the 8-hour day? Now, there are reasons why they're involved in the 8-hour day, because actually bettering the conditions of the working class is actually really important for working people. I mean, peace is actually really important for working people. It doesn't affect them in the same way as having enough to eat. So the kind of ethos of, and where I'm staying in the whatever the kind of dormitory thing over there, there's a car parked. I don't know whether it's someone at this conference or whether it's someone else that says their bumper sticker is earn less wages, which again I just think is really fucking bizarre, or is a classic example of middle class attitudes of we have the privilege to actually, the whole concept of the individual A can make a difference on his or her own. Boycott this, you know, if only we consumed less, the world would be a better place. I think is a strange middle class attitude, completely antithetical to anarchism. And secondly, the concept, as I say, of having the privilege of, most people I know want to earn more, not less. And hopefully they will. I think I'm going to leave it at that. I'm not sure I can say much more without repeating myself. So, I don't know if that's given any of you any food for thought, but I'm going to shut up and hopefully facilitate a discussion on what I just said was a load of crap.